the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. It's 98 degrees, 3:30 in the afternoon, and I'm sitting here with three very stinky entomologists that's been counting bugs for you all day. The one bad thing about a studio is with no air and no draft, it gets a little tough this time of year, but
you can handle it.
I can't handle it, man. I cannot handle it. Like you said, we're almost done for the year, and y'all are just getting cranked up. But I know y'all had a lot you wanted to talk about today. I've heard a range of topics. Do y'all want to go to cotton or soybeans first?
It don't matter. You can go to either one of them. We're going to cover them both.
Soybean man.
I'll say let's roll with cotton first.
Oh, the soybean man said let's roll with cotton first. So I'm going to look back across the room.
All my history's in cotton there.
Well, you're soybean man now.
Maybe.
He's both.
All right, Angus, you're up to plate. Don't swing and miss.
Well, what we really wanted to talk about is just we're giving again, this is just another update, insect update, general update on what we're seeing, what's going on in the field. And one of the probably the biggest things in cotton that we have been dealing with over the last several weeks, and we've talked about this on previous podcasts, but still about these worms. You know, we kind of predicted this early on, one of the first podcasts we did this year, where we were talking about we might see a trickle of worms or different things like that, and that's what we've seen. We're going to have a lot of damage this year. I say a lot. We're not going to have a lot of damage. We're going to have more damage than we're accustomed to seeing because of that. But one of the things we really need to talk about a lot, there's a lot of people that have missed worms this year with the diamides, both Prevathon and Besiege, good rates and well-timed. And we've spent a lot of time in the field and our own plots and in farmers' fields looking at some of this stuff. And we're going to try to discuss some of that as well as we move along today.
I didn't listen to anything you just said other than we can't kill bugs.
He didn't say that. He said we're just having some issues.
If you're having issues, and I've heard y'all talk about a lot of misses, define what a miss is, Jeff.
Well, a miss is not easy to define.
Angus, I'll pitch it back over to you.
that's a great question, and it's a thing we've been talking about a lot with consultants and growers and stuff the last couple of weeks, and it's kind of like we talked about on the last podcast, is basically tempering expectations a little bit. Spraying Prevathon on Bolgar 2 and going out in the field and finding two or three or four worms in a whole field is not a miss. And some people perceive that as a miss. They expect to go out there and not see anything.
Now you sound like Tom. Nothing's ever 100%.
Well, I think I had a time to think about this a little bit since you popped that on Jeff, but I think a miss can be described differently by different people. But the bottom line is some of the things that we've put out are not performing like we've seen them perform in the past, and there's probably a variety of reasons for that. And in a lot of cases, we did not get acceptable control.
So what I'm hearing is there's not a Mississippi State University Extension Service recommendation on what a miss is.
A miss is a slag that means a lot to a lot of people. I know what it means to me, and I've looked at some of them fields I would say is a miss. And I've looked at some that we thought was a miss and probably was going to be okay.
So let's go to my weed science brethren. What do you consider is acceptable control then?
When we get them below threshold.
Okay.
It don't have to be a zero, but we got to get them below threshold. And it goes back to what Gore just said. It's about somewhat of management of expectations as well. We don't have to have a zero to have zero economic damage.
All right. So he talked about worms and Prevathon, and you may have a couple misses. Care to explain?
Well, one of the big things that we need to talk about first is that when we talk about misses with Prevathon and Besiege right now, we're mainly talking about cotton. And so that's where we're getting the calls on Prevathon and Besiege, is spraying a Bolgar 2 or a wide strike cotton field, any of those cottons.
Well, Don said we were talking about cotton first.
And finding
worms.
We're
talking about cotton, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I just said. But leading into that, and we're not getting off on beans yet since Don doesn't want to yet, but we haven't had any complaints, or I haven't. I don't know if Angus has or not, in soybeans with those exact same products. And so it's really just a not even necessarily a coverage issue, but a function of the behavior of those larvae in cotton versus soybeans. Under bloom tags is where 90% of them are going to be.
Man, I've heard under bloom tags for 2 weeks.
There's pictures all over Twitter of worms under bloom tags.
And Bobby, if you're wondering what that means, you have, you know, a white flower or a pink flower, moth lays an egg on those petals on the inside, and it, as it closes up, that egg and larvae, when it hatches, is protected. So unless you spray before that flower closes, that worm is going to be protected until he comes out, and he's going to be pretty good size when he goes through that bloom, through that bowl, and comes out.
And he's hungry.
And yeah, and you'll never kill that worm unless he comes out, and he may not come out for a while. And I got a great example. I had a guy the other day pull like 10 pink blooms that had white eggs on them. He brought them in his office and laid them on his desk and let them dry. When they dried, he said every one of them folded to the inside. He said you could not see a visible egg anymore. He opened them all up, and the eggs were still there. And it goes back to that trickle effect that we said. If you got these low egg numbers and you're not going to spray, you're always letting a few more come through, and a few come through till you get to a point that you're ready to spray. And I'm not saying that attributes for everything that we've dealt with this year, but it's got to have an impact. There's no question about it.
So how do you set a threshold when you're dealing with that?
Well, I mean, the thresholds that we got, look, these products are the best products we've seen in years and years. And if you get a big egg lay and it's all nice and easy, you make that application and everything's done. The problem is, like we said earlier, we had a period of several weeks where we were not getting big egg lays in places, so we let some stuff slip by. Now, at the same time, we've been in fields that were targeted with the right rate, the high rates of either of those two products, Besiege or Prevathon, and 7-8 days later, you know, we're finding 4 or 5 day old worms out there. Had those folded in and couldn't get to them? I don't know. It seems likely because, again, I do not think we're dealing with a resistance problem with the product at all. I don't think so.
Not from what you're seeing in soybeans.
Not from what we're seeing in soybeans.
And the bigger those worms are and the deeper in the canopy are, the harder they are to control. And it's been that way for as long as we've been spraying worms.
That's right. And yeah. I've had some older consultants tell me some of the ones they left that were actually at threshold where those worms were located on the plant. We talked about whether or not we would go back after those worms again that were still above threshold, you know, 8 days or so after when the residual should be there. And they said, ain't no way I'm going after them. I lived through the days trying to kill worms in the bottom. Can't do it. And, you know, that may have been the right decision in some cases.
So what I'm hearing is it's more of a BT thing than it is a Prevathon thing.
Well, that's more of a cotton thing. Worms are hard to kill in cotton when they get down in there and they get in protective places.
No, I'm talking about tempering the expectations. You know, last year you talked about tempering guys' expectations with BT and having to spray BT cotton. And now it's tempering them back to the old days where if they're in the bottom, we're not going to hit them anyway.
But I think it is somewhat of a BT thing because 5 years ago, when those worms got in those bloom tags,
they said, ouch, I don't like it.
Yeah, it was 20 or 30% of them survived. Now 100% of them are surviving once they get in white blooms.
Yeah, one of the things, too, and I've used this analogy a lot. We alluded to it a little bit earlier, just talking about expectations, you know, and yield loss. One of the problems we got with cotton is you can walk into a cotton field and with your arm and peel the canopy back, and you might be looking at 50 or 60 bowls and don't realize it, but that one that has damage sticks out.
Oh, yeah.
And a farmer walks out there and sees it, he gets upset. That does not mean at all that you have an economic problem.
Well, there's a lot of 15-node cotton out there, and I hadn't seen a lot of 50 bowls when you peeled them back this year.
Well,
I want to watch where let me give you
this example then. It's just real as quick as I can give it to you.
You got all the time in the world, baby.
Well, this is a good example, and after talking this same thing through with a lot of people, it made a lot of sense to them, and they got it a lot better. And this is just an example, and this does not take into account in any whatsoever compensation, which happens a lot in cotton. 30 bowls per foot on a 4-gram bowl, and that might be a little light on the growth. It's about 1,200 pounds an acre, okay? One damaged boll per foot, when I did the math, if I did it right, I think I did, is 40 pounds per acre. So one boll per foot of row damage. I haven't been in many of these fields, all they may have exceeded threshold, and we can find damaged bolls that's even close to one boll per foot. And as I talked through this with some consultants that were concerned about their level of damage, after we talked through it, they said, man, I might have one every 10 foot. And once they kind of realized that, you know, that whole thing about not being economic and being able to take some damage with zero yield loss started kind of sinking in some.
You're giving up 5 pounds of lint.
Yeah. Which don't even come so close to covering the cost.
I don't think any of this is to the level where we saw in 17 when, you know, this really broke loose and you could part the canopy back and you're looking at a dozen poles with a hole the size of your little finger in them.
Well, and the big difference between this year and 17 is in 17 we didn't know the issues that we were having with 2-gene cotton, and we weren't spraying quite as much on eggs then. This year we're pretty much on top of the game.
Yep.
When we could be, but that trickle effect has somewhat affected that, because at the beginning we never really reached that 20% egg threshold, but it was 5-6% eggs for an extended period of time.
And we've had some weather events that delayed applications as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some is doing it justice, Don.
Look, in some of my own cotton plots, we were in them yesterday checking worm tests. Every week, a couple times a week, we were out there because we wanted to trigger somewhere between 10 and 20% eggs, our first application. And we'd kick the moths up, and we'd find 2 or 3%, just not enough. And finally, we just triggered it anyway. And we got out there yesterday and started rating plots. And in our unsprayed plots, we still had some pretty high damage. So, I mean, we even experienced the exact same thing in our own plots with this trickle effect. Now, we got people getting big egg lays, and I've had a couple calls even today about some areas getting big egg lays. If the, you know, if I had a perfect world, we'd get a huge egg laid, and we'd know exactly what to do, when to do it, and get it over with. But, you know, a year like this year, I hope we don't have another one, but it's been unusual.
Yeah, so, I can't ever remember a year where I've had so many people just every day telling me that they're kicking up moths. It usually kind of comes in flurries, but this year it's
the other thing too. I mean, I'm not trying to go agronomic on y'all, but we got a lot of cotton out there that's cutting out, and a lot of cotton that's a long way to go.
We got some in the same field. It's like that.
Yeah,
exactly. Bottom ends that got water stood on them. It's a lot of tough things out there to deal with agronomically. Could that be those different ages cotton be causing some of that?
I don't think it's just a different ages of cotton. I think it's the different ages of everything. Corn, soybeans.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a bunch of bollworms coming out of soybeans right now. And there's, 2 million acres of soybeans out there feeding the population. So.
There's a lot of corn drying down, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the kind of, so we can leave plenty of time for soybeans, I think kind of the bottom line of all of this is the products that we're using, the rates we're using, I think we're doing the best that we can do. We're going to get a little bit of damage, and 99.9% of the fields I've seen I don't think will be economical at all. One of the things I think the products we're using, again, are still the best things we have available to us, being the diamides. But one of the things that I wanted to just mention before we got off cotton is that you mentioned cutout, Bobby. We got a lot of cotton right now that may be anywhere from 2 to 3-4 nodes above white flower. And if our recommendations change at that point, and I'll be honest, I'm not a fan of pyrethroid acephate or whatever, you know, if I'm really targeting a good population of bollworms. But in some of these cases, we've already got one or even two, or in some cases, three diamide shots out. And we're talking about 57, 58-cent cotton right now. I've been recommending a lot here lately on some of these bigger egg lays we're here right at the end that we need to take care of, and we don't want to spend diamide money of a shot of acephate and, you know, as high as we can go on the pyrethroid end of it. And so far, it's been doing really well. It don't last long, but it's been getting us out of a jam without dropping $20 more an acre on this crop.
That's the thing to remember. It's not going to last very long.
Right. And, you know, that's great for the cotton that is cutting out, but there's cotton out there that it scares me to death how far guys are going to have to push some stuff this year.
I talked to a guy last week. His wasn't blooming yet.
Oh, my God.
Talked to a guy a week and a half ago that hadn't put nitrogen out yet.
Oh, God.
it's just a messed up year. I'm telling you, it's a screwed up year.
I was wondering if y'all are about to get into a competition.
No. Unfortunately, that's not the kind of competition we want to get
in. Who's got the worst story?
there's a pretty bad story pretty much on every farm you go to. Everybody's got one of those fields somewhere.
And I will say this, though, because usually we don't get to see anything but the bad stuff. If they call us, it's never good. But I have been in some real good cotton this year, too, in places. And I think that we're going to have some a really big crop on some acres, and we're going to have some that's going, you know, that's going to be struggling, and some that needs a good fall to finish out.
Yeah, without a doubt.
You're going to see a little bit of everything from not good to average to really good.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, getting back to bollworms, is we really hadn't touched on any of the three gene stuff yet, and we've looked at several Bollguard 3 fields this year, and we've sprayed some Bollguard 3 and Wide Strike 3 fields across the state. Several of these instances where we've gone out and looked at Bollguard 3 fields, Don and I went and looked at a couple weeks ago, and you know, the white flowers are the weak spot in any BT cotton, just like we was talking about earlier. The difference is it's not as critical in Bollguard 3 that when you're finding 1 to 2 day old larvae in those white blooms, especially in Bollguard 3. In a lot of situations, they're just never turning into anything right now. And that's, I know, Angus, you looked at a field of Bollguard 3 that did get sprayed. So that's not going to be every instance, but I wouldn't be afraid to watch those 1 to 2 day old larvae in Bollguard 3 cotton.
Yeah, I mean, we've sprayed several Bollguard 3 fields this year across the state. We sprayed a few Wide Strike 3 fields. I don't think as a percentage of the acres this year it's hit what it was last year, even though we sprayed fewer fields, but as a percentage of what's actually in VIP cotton this year. Part of that was because we had such big, heavy egg lays, I think, last year. I really don't know, but I think that has a lot to do with it. But, again, this one field I did walk, it needed treated. I mean, we were finding, you know, well over threshold, maybe 2-3x threshold live, you know, anywhere from 3 to 7 day old worms. And we did make the decision to treat that field. So that's going to happen. And I know it's going to be hard to watch some of these small worms, but in the future, you know, if we're going to try to reduce the cost, the input of this crop, I think for now we still can, you know, give it every opportunity to work that it's going to work.
Before you holler calf rope.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if that starts changing, and I expect it will change soon, the next few years, you know, we'll hear about it in Texas and Louisiana, and we'll get the word out to everybody.
Yeah.
All right, Don, you're up to the plate. Well, talk about some edamame.
No.
Man, it's good with soy sauce and a little sea salt.
Look, I ate some spicy garlic edamame a couple weeks ago. You talk about righteous. It was good.
Well, you know, Angus mentioned red band and stink bugs earlier. You know, they're showing up here, there, and yonder. I don't think we've treated very much at all. People are watching some. I have yet to find one here in Washington County. But, you know, I got a feeling we're on track for something similar to 2016 as far as, you know, some.
What gives you that feeling? Just some rumbling in your gut?
Well, the winter of 17-18 virtually eliminated them from down to Hattiesburg or below. So 18, we didn't hardly have any. This year, we've got some, but we have a huge host gap. We have virtually no beans from in large areas of the South Delta. So any that's, you know, would be moving up from Hattiesburg, Madison through there, they hit this big spot that's been underwater for most of the year, and there's no beans there for them to, you know, build and keep creeping up. Well, that may or may not have a huge impact, but I think it would.
So you're saying the flood might help some people?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'd wish a flood on anybody.
But
it's
causing a natural break in the population movement, is what
you're
telling me.
It could be.
Yeah, and one of the things, as far as the acres that we have treated this year for red banded, and I suspect we're probably up into the several thousands now, the numbers they're treating are just thresholds. It's not blowout numbers. I'd say this population has not built probably as quickly as I thought it would this year based on when we were finding them earlier in the year, you know, a couple months ago down south. So it has been slow, and maybe it's something to do with this gap in that big area. But
right now, a lot of our beans are just starting to get into that R4, right. R5 stage.
Again, with 70% of our beans planted, you know, after May 15th, I mean, that's a big deal when it comes to red banded stinkbugs. The numbers are picking up, and I'm starting to see fields that's been desiccated. As more and more of those fields, they start knocking the leaves off and the early stuff starts drying down, it could escalate quickly. As of now, we found them as far north, at least that I know of, and I would guess there's been a couple found north of that around Marks. We found some in Tippo last week.
And, you know, Jeff and I looked at a field down around Yazoo City last Friday. It's been running 2 to 3 for, what, a couple of weeks, and it just really hadn't blown up any more than that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's good news, I guess.
Well, you're talking about cotton with a long way to go. There's a lot of beans with a long way to go.
Yeah.
I'm confident we're going to deal with these things on a fair number of acres this year. I don't think it'll be the extent that we saw in 17. I think, like Don said, it'll be more like 16, but we will deal with them.
Well, I saw a field of beans yesterday that was 3 inches tall.
Yeah, those got a long way to go. That'd be a red banded magnet.
I think they're going to run out of heat units in daylight before they get there.
They may do it.
You know, we jump straight into red bandeds in soybeans, but, I mean, I don't remember another year like we've had this year with bollworms in beans, so we kind of probably need to skip back to that.
Yeah, we do.
I think we've probably sprayed more bollworms in soybeans than we ever have this year, would be my guess.
As far as I've ever seen or even heard of.
And I think it makes perfect sense because for the first time we had huge acres of beans that were flowering when the bollworms arrived, and we usually don't have that.
You also had a huge acreage of cotton this year like you hadn't had in the past either.
Well, at that time, cotton and beans were competing for miles coming out of corn, and we got corn stretched out like we normally don't have.
So why is it worse?
The beans, because they were at the most attractive stage for bollworms when the moth flight was going on, when generally most of our beans are planted earlier and have already got out of the flowering stage.
And, you know, we had cotton that was probably either just beginning to flower or not flowering. Beans in full flower, therefore they were more attractive at that moment.
All right, so you haven't had any problem killing them in beans?
Not with the diamides that we're – I mean, that's our kind of our indicator for what's going on with cotton, not thinking we have a resistance problem.
What are you shaking your head about, Bobby?
Because Angus won't talk into the mic. That's why nobody can hear him.
Well, I was trying to look at you, and
Too late now. It's over.
But, you know, we've gotten questions about, okay, I have X number. What should I do with them? And, you know, we've got a published threshold table. You know, folks have asked, you know, are you comfortable with this? And with what we did with Brian's work and all those infestations, I'm pretty comfortable with it. I don't know about y'all.
Yeah, I am. I know we're getting short on time here, but I do think you brought this up that this is definitely worth mentioning. It goes just back to what we said about cotton and what's economic. We did years of work looking at pod damage and pod removal and how that influences yield. And this is, I mean, beans are unbelievably can compensate for stuff. And with 100% pod removal at R2 and R3, we saw zero yield loss over like 6 or 7 different locations when we did this, and zero yield loss. At 50%, even as late as R4, we saw zero yield loss. Now, it will make the beans a little later, no doubt, but that just goes to show how much they can compensate. So when you rake a canopy back and you see a few holes in some pods, I can almost guarantee you it's going to mean almost nothing, depending on the level of that. I mean, even at as late as R5, we only saw about a 50% yield loss when they were filling the pods. As long as you got the year, they will definitely come back, and it's not nearly as bad as it looks.
And based on that threshold work, I did a little math, and at $9 beans, one worm is costing you around $1.50. You know, if you just let him go and let him eat, he's going to eat about $1.50 worth of beans.
one worm per 25 sweeps.
Per 25 sweeps.
That's a damn lot of money. $1.50 an acre.
What if you're going to spend $15 an acre to control it?
Well, the deal is, if you're going to spray one of the diamides and you're going to put it out by air, that's $20 to $22 an acre with an airplane.
I'm just wondering why I'm sitting in a room full of entomologists and there's a cockroach on the wall and he ain't been killed yet.
Well,
that's a good question. I see him. He's huge. He's about to fall on Don's head. He's about to jump on Don's head.
Yeah, he'll keel over if he falls.
We're going to have to get a video of that. That's going to be a Twitter moment.
So wait a minute, Don. Back up 1 second. I know, again, time's getting short, but back up and explain that, because what Bobby heard when you said that was that cost you $1.50 an acre. What you said is cost you $20 an acre to treat him.
Right. If with beans at $9 and they're floating around above and below that, at $9, if you let one boll worm per 25 sweeps go, he's going to eat about $1.50's worth of beans. Now, if you go to treat that one worm, with a diamide, you're going to spend $20 an acre.
So you're losing $18.50 an acre.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the point. If you spray, that's the point that I thought you were trying to make. But yes. I didn't think that's what Bobby heard.
No,
that's
Bobby.
Not what I heard.
Bobby,
at all.
Bobby heard that one worm's eating $1.50 worth of beans.
That's what you said.
It is. But the deal is, are you going to spend $20 to save a dollar, to protect $1.50?
That's the point I wanted you to reiterate right there.
Yes.
And really the thing that people need to think about is we've got wiggle room in those thresholds. They're not an economic injury level. They're designed to spray to keep that population from reaching the economic injury level.
Yeah, there's, as Jeff calls it, wiggle room in case there's a delay because the airplane's backed up. It rains for 4 or 5 days. So you've got some time in there and wiggle room on numbers.
Yep.
What kind of roach has a white dot on his head?
Oh, crap.
A white dot. Does that one have a white dot on his head?
It has a white dot on his head.
I don't know. Probably a GMO roach. I don't know.
I imagine he's like us. He's trying to get out of this 112-degree temperature outside.
Yeah. I thought they come in to find water. Was that an old wives' tale?
No, they'll come in to find water or to get away from too much water.
Well, they all ought to be inside this year then.
It's all about water.
Well, this went downhill fast.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. We probably ought to wind it up.
That was my cue for y'all to quit talking about bugs.
Now I'm thinking
about a different bug.
A white-headed roach.
He's right there.
I see.
Right
you.
Above Don's head.
I see. He ain't moved yet.
All right, guys. Well, that's what we got for y'all. Y'all have any last parting shots today?
Just keep scouting.
Yep.
Don't give up.
If you need us, call us.
Finish line's coming soon because we're about to run out of heat units.
Not today.
You couldn't tell it by today.
We're getting all we can get today, and hopefully they'll stretch out into September for a lot of these guys. But we appreciate y'all listening, and if y'all have anything pressing on your mind about killing bugs, y'all know who to call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.